At a signal from Uncle Parker, carefully timed to fall between the gasp of astonishment from the assembly and the hubbub that would inevitably ensue if given the chance, a gay Mozart air struck up from somewhere among a clump of potted palms in the far corner of the room. This, it later turned out, had been the inspiration of Aunt Celia, who, having once embarked on playing the role of hostess, had evidently been taken over it by it hook, line, and sinker. The Bagthorpes advanced, boggling. The board before them was groaning beyond even their wildest dreams, and was the more exotic for seeming to be sighted in a tropical rainforest. Had cockatoos been perched on the chandeliers, they would scarcely have seemed inappropriate. Mrs. Fosdyke, herself a caterer of no mean order, boggled more than anyone. She was unprepared not only for the overwhelming greenery aspect of things, but also for the presence of at least six waiters in tie and tails, standing stiffly to attention. "For all the world like a set of stuffed penguins in a jungle," she later told her friends, with a fine disregard for geography. "And four more of 'em fiddling and blowing in the corner like mad things. She's mad, that Mrs. Parker, and haven't I always said so?" At the time, however, she was too dazed and dosed with champagne to do more than take a seat at the place Uncle Parker had cunningly laid for her. He thought it safer to have her in sight as a guest than out of sight sabotaging activities in the kitchen. He diplomatically signaled to a waiter bearing a large silver platter of Mrs. Fosdyke's stuffed eggs, garnished lavishly with parsley. This was placed, with an expression of outstanding disdain on the face of its server, in a central position on the table. The five other waiters then closed in, and the banquet was under way. It began surprisingly well. The long-starved Bagthorpes fell upon the food with a will. Conversation was thin on the ground, and there was virtually no lively interchange of views and opinions. A neutral observer would have formed the impression that the guests had been given 5 minutes in which to consume enough nutriment to last them for the next calendar month. The waiters themselves formed more or less this opinion, and as the meal progressed, their lips curled the more. They were accustomed to the kind of people who picket things, and push away their plates half-empty. No plate was likely to be left half-empty at this gathering. Unfortunately, Daisy herself was not hungry. She had had unlimited access to Grandma's Fortnum and Mason hamper during her stay at Unicorn House, and had fed well since her return. She began to find the spectacle of so many people stuffing themselves and paying no attention whatever to herself and Billy Goat Gruff depressing. Her eye fell speculatively on the small covered tureen by her plate. She shook her head sadly. "You got to stay on, Lid," she told it. She cast around for something that would cheer her up, and almost at once remembered the two baskets she had seen Jack deposit in her father's study. Despite her seemingly careless reassignment of little Tommy to Grandma, Daisy had become genuinely fond of him. It seemed a pity for him to miss the proceedings. She wound her goat's ribbon loosely round the back of her chair and trotted out, unnoticed by anybody. Now, Daisy had intended only to introduce the kitten into the party. She had no real reason to feel affection for Wong Fu, and indeed still bore the marks of his bite. She said later that it had been the sad little whimpering noises from his basket that had upset her. For whatever reason, then, once she had loosed little Tommy and given him a good cuddle, she turned her attention to the other basket. "I better not mix them," she thought wisely. "I'll put little Tommy in the party, then I'll come and fetch the Peaky on his lead and take him to the old Griffin." She accordingly went back to the hall, and, half opening the dining-room door, slipped Tommy through. She then returned and opened Wong Fu's basket. By the time she found her mistake, it was too late. The Pekingese was out at a bound and through the door. Daisy gave chase, but Wong Fu was not even wearing a lead at which she could clutch. "Oh, dear!" she squealed, and lost her head. The Bagthorpes never really knew what hit them. One minute they all had their heads down, feeding deliriously. The next, the table was rocking, plates breaking on all sides, and a jungle was coming down about their ears. The people who did the most yelling, and competition was keen, were the London caterers, who had not been conditioned to this kind of scene. Two of them witnessed the dislodging of the lid of Daisy's tureen, and saw the mass of writhing white maggots, which had certainly been no part of the set menu. They became quite hysterical, and ran straight out of the house, although not before one of them had been bitten by Wong Fu. The goat, who had recently been kept on a fairly tight rein by his possessive owner, was now hell-bent on a field day. He reverted to form. Only Mr. Bagthorpe had reason to be pleased about this. At least now the rest of his family had seen the animal in its killing mood. It charged indiscriminately at everything. If there had been a troll present, it would have charged at that. Jack tore at the streamers of vine and ivy tangled about his head, and looked wildly about for the three loose animals. This was not easy, because they were all moving very fast. By now, everybody was moving very fast. When Mr. Bagthorpe yelled, "Out, all of you! Get the hell out of here!" Jack, for one, was inclined to obey. So, it seemed, was everybody else. The younger Bagthorpes made for the door after their father, leaving their mother to help Grandpa with Grandma, who was shrieking, "Get him, Thomas, get him!" and carried on shrieking this even as she was bundled into the car. As the cars simultaneously revved up, Uncle Parker lurched out of the front door, a garland of roses and ivy draped over his right ear. He was yelling something, but nobody waited to hear what. "Thank God we're out of that!" Mr. Bagthorpe exclaimed fervently, as he threw the car out of the drive, in the direction of home.